Blog Talk Radio.
I'm not free to be.
like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase tonight. I'm your host, John Darlington, and we are here on the 15th of August, 2018. My special guest is Sid Hagen. Sid will be talking about his latest release, his latest album. Sid, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you on. We could talk for hours just about your musical influences. That song has a lot of things. I mean, if I pronounce it correctly, that's Seer.
Correct.
Yep. And that's the title track of the album.
Yes.
And that song has a lot of soul to it. It has kind of different things. I would love for you, Sid, to talk about that to the listening audience, about your writing of that, about the musicians that you have on that song, because it's just an incredible song. And kind of lay that. It's really something. Talk to us about that and about the writing of it and putting that together and having the right musicians to do that.
Well, it was, Seer is it's like an adjective. And there's a number, if you look in a dictionary, there's a lot of different usages for the thought of, for the word. The one that I found that in a phrase that I read in a book, I don't know, quite a number of years ago, where somebody was describing the landscape of a desert as here, which meant that it was like dry and barren. And the reason I wrote the song I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, and at just about this time last year, just a little under a year ago, or a little over a year ago, there was a Unite the Right rally here in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Right.
That was organized by several large groups of white supremacists that came here actually there were several other demonstrations in the 3 months, you know, that preceded, the one that happened in August of 2017, because there are two big statues in the park downtown here in Charlottesville. It's a city of about 50,000 people. It's not a big city. And this is where the University of Virginia is. And that's usually around 27 or 28,000 students. Of course, I may be getting that wrong, but I think I'm close. So it swells to almost 75,000 people when the students are here. But in the summer, they're not here. But, you know, some of them are, but, you know, not the big crowd. But this is a city in what was called the Deep South. And this was a part of the Confederacy during the 1850s, when the Confederate states, seceded from the Union. And, of course, everybody that reads history books knows that the South did not prevail. And the Union was reunited. But in the years after the Civil War, there were quite a number of groups and various people that wanted to keep the Southern or the Confederate ideals alive. And in the century, into the 20th century, I think in 1915 or 1920, the Daughters of the Confederacy started raising money to build statues all over the country. And there are two statues in a park, which is right in downtown Charlottesville, right next to the courthouse, which is an old courthouse, where Thomas Jefferson argued cases when he was the president. And not only that, but where that park is less than a block away from, you can see old buildings there, and in the sidewalk, there's a plaque that was installed on the sidewalk that showed where the old flea market was. And they erected these statues there, one of Stonewall Jackson, another one of Robert E. Lee, on horses, not looking defeated, but looking triumphant. And there are still quite a number of people, African-American people that live in this area that are descendants of the enslaved population.
Right.
And if you can imagine, you know, walking down there and looking at the statues of these people who basically wanted to, you know, protect the right to own slaves, let's just say that there were people in town that started making noise about maybe either, you know, selling the statues or getting rid of them, and there's a huge debate about it. And I think in other cities across the country, it has actually gotten, you know, more strenuous. And in the current political climate, some of these groups that were sort of in the shadows decided to come forward. And
right.
What better place to pick to do a rally like this than in a somewhat liberal town? I mean, here's University of Virginia. It's a, most university towns are usually, you know, hotbeds of people that are, shall we say, free thinkers. And these people came to Charlottesville in August on the pretense of trying to tell people that, you know, they didn't think that the monuments needed to be, you know, dismantled. Yeah, but they also came dressed in Ku Klux Klan outfits, neo-Nazis with swastikas on flags.
Yep.
And if anybody, I don't know if you saw the Vice video that came from that.
No, I haven't seen that.
Well, you search the Vice video about the Charlottesville thing last year. I think over 20 million people viewed it. And,
wow.
But anyhow, it played out on television. I live in the county. I don't live in the city. I had friends that called me and sent me messages in tears that, you know, our city's being torn apart. And a lady named Heather Heyer died when one of those guys drove his car through a crowd of people, which I think is a very famous photograph of the bodies flying. And so I wrote the song about that, but the musical inspiration for it was A Love Supreme by John Coltrane.
Mm.
And I'm not a jazz musician, but I'm a huge fan of jazz music in general. And the words literally kind of wrote themselves, and I wrote the song in a Celtic tuning called Dad Gad tuning, D-A-D-G-A-D tuning, which was used a lot by Jimmy Page and other British guitar players. And initially, it wasn't really supposed to be a jazz song. I wrote it on guitar. And when
okay.
I first recorded it, I recorded the basic track, and the guy I worked with, Paul Carreri, who co-produced it with me, you know, just put a little drum sequence down, and I played with that. But then, you know, the song sort of like took off, and I've learned. I'm 65 now. I've been recording music on and off ever since I was 15, I learned early that lots of times, even if you have a song that you've got, you know, in your head when you record it, and then other people start to work on it, it sort of takes on a life of its own. And this is one of those songs.
Right.
It's, you know, so I recorded the guitars, I think four acoustic guitars, which are you can kind of hear in the background, did the first vocal, basically like on the second take, I think I got the original vocal, and then put some of the other vocals on it, and it left it, and it was about a month, and then my friend Pat Lawrence, who plays upright bass, came and played his bass part on it, which I think is brilliant, and I had no idea what he'd do.
It's amazing. That's the first thing I hear in that song, Sid, is because I play bass. I don't play the jazz bass or the upright bass, but I hear the bass right off the bat in most songs. And that bass is just incredible. It just kind of brings what would almost seem like kind of a rock song into the jazz genre a little bit there. And like you were also talking about the drums, and I totally agree with you. That upright bass kind of gives it that that kind of jazzy, smoky room kind of feel to it.
Well, yeah, it was interesting. And of course, I've been working with Pat Lawrence on and off since the early 2000s. You know, he played in a couple of bands that I had when I was living in Lynchburg. Now he lives in for the most part in and around Greensboro, North Carolina. But he and his girlfriend Martha Bassett keep a little house over in Charlotte Courthouse, which is, I don't know, from here maybe 45 miles. And we've always kept in touch. And he likes working with me, and we have huge respect for each other. Of course, I'll never be the musician that he is, but you know, he came and you know, did his part, and that changed the music. And I guess what I could tell anybody who's listening is that I am not, you know, I'm not, you know, a madman control person. I've always wanted other musicians that I work with to change the music that I did, because invariably they always made it better, you know, made my music better. There are some people who will tell people what to play, but I have no idea how to tell Pat Lawrence what to play. I'm not a bass player. So
yeah,
he interpreted the song his way. And then I think 2 weeks later, I had met a jazz saxophonist in the Charlottesville area named Charles Owens, who evidently was conservatory trained and has played a lot. If you search on Pandora, you can type his name in, and there is a Charles Owens, like, channel.
Oh, wow.
Pandora.
That's cool. Yeah.
And I met Charles Owens at a party one night here and didn't even know who he was. Until
wow.
I saw a video of him later, and he's on my Facebook page, and I sent him a message with the basic and just, you know, I didn't know what he would say. I said, would you be willing to play a solo on this if I paid you? And a week passed, and then I got a message from him, and he said, sure, I'd love to.
That's really cool.
So, you know, we brought him in, and I had never even really told him what the music was really about. So when he pulled up in front of my friend Paul's house, I met him outside, and he was getting his saxophone out, you know, a little case. And he said, so where do you want to go with this? And I said, well, you know, I told him that A Love Supreme was the inspiration for the music. And he smiled, because, you know, almost all great saxophone players love John Coltrane.
Yep.
And so what he did, without any other prompting from me, is we ran the track, but, you know, we got him mic'd up, and then, you know, Paul, you know, headphones, and, you know, Paul, you know, said, you comfortable? I said, yeah. And he said, play it through it once, and I want to just kind of play a little bit and just get a sense of it again. And then he said, let's do it. And what he did is, if you are familiar with A Love Supreme, he inserted phrases from A Love Supreme into his solo.
Oh, I love that song. I think it's one of the most incredible songs, Sid. It's just like, I love to put it on sometimes. And don't you think, and I think you and I agree with the same things with music. I think it kind of changes, sometimes the music can change the mood or change the air of things. And like you're talking about, you know, things going on in Charlottesville and things going on here and things going on there. Man, I put on Coltrane's Love Supreme, and I can feel like just things changing. And isn't that amazing how music can do that? And music that was written years and years ago,
you know, I don't know if I can be mentioned in the same breath with John Coltrane, but Charles Owens, just so you know, that solo was done in one take.
Wow.
In other words, he played the solo, and me and Paul just about fell out of our chairs, of course, listening to it. As long as he's standing there in front of him while he played it. And he said, how's that? And I said, nothing needs to be changed, you know. And I mean, my friend Paul and I had chicken skin. We had goosebumps. I mean, it was like being it was like, it was transcendental what he did. And, you know, he's such a brilliant musician. I still marvel that what I did was interesting enough to, you know, that he would come and do that. Because he plays with the best, you know, and this really is. So, and you know, Paul Carreri was actually quite famous in the 90s and toured, but he injured his wrists. And, you know, I can't remember if I sent you the links, but on my website, you know, there are links that you can look at, you know, some of the work that he's done. And his wife's name is Devin Spruill, who's a very famous folk singer. And tours in England, and you know, she's currently up in Canada. And Devin is the female voice on that, you know. And I was excited to work with her and see. Devin also looms large in this because up until 2016, when I moved to Charlottesville, I hadn't written a song since the 80s.
Wow.
And I won't go into the gory details. I was in a long marriage with somebody who was swept away with alcohol. And that really put a damper on my writing, so I just didn't write for a long time. And so I'm no longer married to that person. It's a 30-year marriage. And when I came to Charlottesville, I had friends who were musicians who were on Facebook. And, of course, when you meet some of them, all of their friends start to end up in your bank page. And Devin, who I'd heard of but never listened to any of her music, was advertising that she was offering to teach children how to write songs at this place here called The Front Porch, which is a small performance venue of people that also teach lessons. And I wrote her a message and asked her if she'd be willing to work with a 63-year-old. She came back and said, sure, I'd love to. And so she was the one that got me writing again. And the first song on the album, Alliance of Kindness, is the first song I wrote under her tutelage. And that song wrote itself. So what I'm saying is Devin and Paul are just really magical people. And they took me in like an orphan child. And I started to become creative again. And
that's amazing.
The thing with
my
album was it was never really an idea that any of this was going to be an album. I just started recording with Paul. I don't know. I guess it was like early in 2017, and we just started doing stuff and took our time. And that whole album kind of coalesced after about the 10th month. And he said, what are we going to do with this? I said, I don't know. And that the Seer was the last song that we did.
Mm.
And it was finished in, I think, January of this year.
Wow.
And so we, you know, the whole thing was, I wanted to see if I could still record because I hadn't recorded in a long time. And, Paul is a very, very – Paul pushed me, 20 years younger than me. So he pushed me in directions that – and I told him I needed that. I need you to, you know, if I'm doing something that sounds too, I don't know, too, like, maybe run-of-the-mill, I gave him complete license to just do whatever he wanted to the music. So
– that's interesting, Sid,
I'm
because –
I'm probably saying too much. Your listeners are going – play some more music and tell that guy to shut up. But
now that's why you're on the show. It's like I love this. You've got so many great things to talk about. You've got this thing happening in your life. You got like things going on that are making you kind of think, well, I don't feel that creative right now. And then all of a sudden things start working again. You start thinking, I've got, you know, people lay down their instruments for a long time, but for the most part, you know, Sid, most of the people I've talked to will pick them up again. And in this situation, you know, you were able to find people to help you to get back where you know, to get started again. And one of the things I think is very interesting is that some musicians have a hard time sharing. You know, you get some really personal things here. You're talking about a lot of deep subjects and stuff. And you've got some people that you trusted enough, you know, to take your music. And you said you wanted people to do that so that they could make it better and make it theirs. I've talked to musicians sure. before, Sid, that didn't want that. They, you know, it's like, okay, you make your own album. I'm making my album. You make it the way I want it to sound because it's actually my name's sure. on it. I'm the writer. So I like your approach to that because it's like, it's almost like you're in a band, but you're not, you know.
I told all of them that I was standing on their shoulders. You know, the other people yeah. that have interviewed me, I've had a couple of interviews. I told them that, you know, I'm a reflection of all that came before me. I mean, my mentors when I was younger and my upbringing, I was a teenager, a sophomore in high school in Atlanta in 1968-69 when the Allman Brothers first arrived and were a local band.
Wow.
And that's the era I came up in off of the scene. And, you know, back then I didn't play guitar. I was just a lead singer, and I started singing in bands in 1968-69. You know, the people that would eventually become the Atlanta Rhythm Section, their guitar player, Barry Bailey, was teaching lessons there at that time, and all the guitar players that were in the bands I was in, they were all taking lessons from him. And they had a band that was called, the Candymen. And at the time, they were session players for a guy named Bill Lowry, who had artists like Billy Joe Royal and Tommy Rowe and Joe South and Dennis Yost from the Plastic Four. But the Candymen were the backup touring band for Roy Orbison.
Wow.
and Barry Bailey, so those guys used to come hear us play at high school dances, you know, when the girls were kissing us backstage. And we all thought that we were really hot stuff. And they'd come back and they'd say, man, that was the best set I ever saw you guys do. Too bad y'all were out of town. You know? And they say, yeah, Sid, you were singing off pitch, you know, and we were like, it was like, you know, Homer Simpson going, oh, you know,
yeah.
But they were hard on us. They told us, they said, if you're serious, you know, there's some things that you're going to need to do and follow. You know, as much as we didn't like hearing it, we'd emulate what they told us. And so, I mean,
yeah,
so I tell people absolutely. That I'm a reflection of those people. You know, if you like what I do, well, then you're liking what they did. And here, the people here in Charlottesville, well, Paul in particular, you know, initially he told me, well, I'm not really sure, you know, I mean, he kind of vetted me. He wanted to make sure we could actually work together. And I think he'd had some bad experiences with people that, like you said, told him, well, I know that you want to help me, but all I want you to do is just push the button, but I'm going to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him, you know, and some of the stuff that he sent me back, John, I'd get the mixes back. I would hear him go, oh no. You know,
wow.
The first night I'd get him and I'd go, well, I don't know. And I'd write him a message, I don't know about this. But then I would live with it for a couple of days. And then it was like, okay, I can live with this.
So how did the recording process work, Sid? I mean, were you working recording from your home and you were just trading files back and forth, or did you ever come together?
No, I've got my own recording rig, but I ended up, you know, paying him, you know, to do the main, you know, I let him do all the recording. I had final call on the mixes, but we, you know, we collaborated, and then I mastered it because I do mastering. And if you can believe this, he uses a recording program called Cubase. I think he's got Cubase Professional, and we recorded the entire album onto a MacBook Pro. Not the most expensive microphone and, you know, not the most expensive instrument. And I think it's proof that if you can visualize it or if you can dream it, the equipment isn't as important as your ears are and also the songs. But, you know, for me, I'm 65 years old now, and I really don't do this for glory or for – I don't want to be famous. You know, I certainly don't want to. There's no way I could put a band together. I mean, if you listen to the album going on, the album, you put a band together, I'd have to have, like, 6 or 7 people and
yeah.
pay them. And, you know, it might be impossible to go on the road with that many people. And I'm never going to be famous, but I sure had a good time doing it.
No, I think
really
it's fun to record it. It is. It's awesome. I love the album. Let's play. You mentioned Alliance of Kindness. Let's play that song. Would you like to talk a little bit about that before we play it?
Yeah, Alliance of Kindness was. She's gonna probably. She might. I have a friend here. She can just remain nameless because she's shy. But she and I both came from what I would refer to as disastrous relationships. We met in 2015, after a mutual friend said, you know, you guys should maybe go to dinner or something. We met halfway. She lived in Charlottesville, and I lived in Lynchburg. And in halfway, there was this restaurant out in the mountains. And so we met there on a Tuesday night in September of 2015. And it was a chilly night, and hardly anybody was there. And both of us were standoffish. And after dinner, we walked out, and our cars were parked right next to each other. And I figured, you know, well, you know, she's nice. I don't know what's going to happen. And she looked at me because there were no clouds in the sky, and the stars were like literally coming right down on us. And she looked up and she said, "Look at the stars. Aren't you going to kiss me?" And
wow.
I looked at her and said, "I said, you want me to kiss you? Are you kidding me?" I was like, you know, this is, you know, we're talking about old folks here, you know. And so we stood out there smooching for like 20 minutes, you know, under the stars. And,
that's really cool.
And Devin Spruill, who's, you know, written this brilliant song, you know, because she told me, what do you want to write about? This is our first writing session in 2015 in September. And I said, well, I want to write about something happy. So we wrote about it. The way she did it is she likes to write, she'll write like several paragraphs and then cherry pick phrases out of paragraphs and start putting songs together that way. Because I wanted to find out what her process was. And so we kind of went back and forth. I wrote it. And then I just sat down one day and I just started playing it, and it literally wrote itself. And that was the first song I recorded with Paul. And I can tell you that my lady friend, we do have an alliance of kindness. She had a party 2 weeks after I met her. I was invited to it, and she's a faculty member at UVA. The place was filled with all these professors who wanted to know who I was. You know, who are you? I said, well, you know, I can take your coats. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, they all, of course, she, you know, played, so I literally got, everybody kept surrounding me, who are you? What are you doing? You know, how do you know her? And so finally I just said, look, we have an alliance of kindness, you know, which is
there
true. And so that's how the song came about. And, you know, it was one of the coolest things that I ever did. And the first time I played it for her, she cried.
That's awesome. That's one of the best setups, Sid Hagen, I've ever heard. I've been doing this for 10 years, over 1,000 interviews, and I think you just got the number one setup of the song.
Oh, God,
well, so.
I don't know. I'm sure
yes.
that you've talked to some great musicians. You know, this was just,
well,
you're talking to
in the mountains,
old school here. So.
Yeah, you're in the mountains. You're out under the stars. I mean, it's just incredible. This is Alliance of Kindness. Sid Hagen, we'll be right back after this.
We fell into each other.
And we're back with Sid Hagen. This is John Darlington. You are listening to John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase. We really appreciate you listening. Sid, his latest album is Seer, and I know it's on SoundCloud, Bandcamp, CD Baby. Where, Sid, what's a website that you could give the listeners to reach your music?
Well, my website, my personal website, has links to SoundCloud and Bandcamp, but also when you go with CD Baby, which is, I don't know, I'm sure you probably know about this, they're the world's largest distributor of independent music. I mean, I think there are others, but they're the biggest one. For their basic package, which I think was like $75, you send them your album, and then they, in turn, will... you know, they send it out to all of the digital storefronts like Spotify, you know, iTunes. It's on Amazon. You know, it's everywhere. I can safely say I sold two albums. I sent it out. But you know, it's out there. I mean, you know, there's way more, you know, huge distribution now for independent people like me than there ever was even 10 years ago. And
right.
I mean, anybody that wants to hear it, I don't know how anybody would actually find it, but out almost everywhere that you want. You know, so if you've got Spotify or if you've got that, just type in Sid Hagen and you should be able to find it. You know, there aren't that many Sid Hagens out there, I don't think, that are making music, and it's out there. And you know, I'm a little less internationally obscure now than I was before I began doing that record. And
well, what's your website, Sid?
It's just, this is all lowercase. It's Okay Then Records, which is OKTNRecords.us.
Okay.
And if you can get to that on the Sid Hagen page there, you can find the Bandcamp. Bandcamp, I don't think, is part of CD Baby. It's a British thing, but it's on there. And but you know, you can actually just type me into Google and probably find it. You know, there also.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there's a ton of music out there. Just so you know, all of the voices on the album are me, with the exception of the female voices, which are both Devin Spruill.
Okay.
All of the acoustic guitars on the album, except for the acoustic, are me. All of the Pat Lawrence is the only bass player, the double bass guy, who's on a couple of the other older tracks that are also on that record. And Paul Carreri, I said, did just about everything else. Two guitar players. The guitar player on Alliance of Kindness is Brian Wooten, who was lead guitar player with Too Smooth, and it's also but he also, these days, he tours. He's the touring guitar player with Trace Atkins.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He and I do. He's got a small production company in Nashville, and he and I collaborate on his projects that he does with mid-level artists who are just wanting to record that, you know, maybe might not be famous, but I do all of his mastering for him.
And oh, that's
so
cool.
Of course, Brian Wooten is one of those monster guitar players that is another person that I'm just so fortunate that I even get to talk with him. He just told me that he'll play in any of my songs that I want for nothing. You know, and I don't know. I mean, I've been, like I said, I am so fortunate that I know such great musicians that take my music to like places that I wouldn't be able to do by myself.
Well, so, I think the album is great. Sid, you did a great job. It just it's really it has a lot of depth to it. I love it. Talk about one of the things I love to talk about to musicians, a couple of things, but one is in the gear. What kind, you've been playing guitar. Talk about the guitars you use now and why you use those, and talk about some of the guitars you've had and how you got, when was it that you kind of fell in love with it and kind of walked through that, and then to what gear that Sid Hagen
used. I started playing guitar.
Yeah.
I started playing guitar when I was in the Army in Germany in the mid-70s, no longer around any band. And so I had to learn how to accompany myself. And let's just say that my learning how to play guitar was really ugly. And my roommate all wanted to throw me off a cliff with my guitar. They were like, no, don't get that out now. You're going to have to go someplace else. And
well, that's funny.
So some people, of course, with instruments like that, you know, it stuff came, easy to them. But, you know, I was self-taught, and I sort of told them. You know, in fact, when I first started playing, all these guys in my Army unit were, you know, they, when I started to actually, you know, put it together, they wanted me to teach them how to play guitar, and I laughed at them, and I said, I don't even know how to play guitar. You don't want me to teach you how to play guitar. So most real guitar players that see me play now, all these years down the road, always want to know, who showed you how to do that? And I tell them, nobody. And so my biggest accomplishment was being able to play and sing at the same time without embarrassing too many people. And, I think I'm fairly competent guitar player, but I'm not a lead player. I don't play like improvisationally, and but I know what I like, and I think, you know, I've got some huge influences. One of which was Ry Cooder, Ry Cooder is a very, 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 very. I think if you listen to my stuff, it's pretty precise, and that's from, you know, and also the guys from the Atlanta Rhythm Section, people like Keith Richards, who, if you've ever read his book, he describes himself as not a musician or a guitar player, but he calls himself a weaver, and he weaves, you know, grooves and things. And, you know, the Stones, the reason why their stuff is so brilliant is because of the composition of the songs are just so incredible, and they're so memorable. And, you know, I think that that's kind of been his strength. He doesn't really claim to be a dynamite guitar player, but he loves to play, and he loves to do grooves. So, you know, it's, I always approach all my playing from, you know, standpoint of how can I make the song sound better, and or how I can make it easier for other people to play along with. And,
yeah.
I have 15 guitars. But,
that's not too bad.
It isn't too bad. You're the first person that's ever said that. My lady friend tells me, she comes and looks at my living room and goes, there's no place to sit here. And, you know, but anyhow.
I feel you.
I've got the most expensive guitar I've got is an Australian guitar, which is a Cole Clark guitar. But the rest of them aren't really all that expensive. None of the guitars were recorded with microphones. I did everything direct, and I have a really good system. I play my guitars. All my acoustics have K&K Pure Mini pickups that are passive built into them. You know, I had them installed, and I play through a FireEye preamp, and I loop a BBE Sonic stomp pedal through that, which is a phase alignment thing. And that evens everything out. And so another person told me the other day that they love the sound of my acoustic guitars on the record. And kind of, I don't know if it's a secret, but that's what I use. And some people like, you know, using expensive microphones. But when you mic guitars, I found as an engineer that unless you're in an acoustically perfect room, you get the room along with your guitar.
Yeah.
Which can either be good or bad, depending upon what you want. And I found recording guitars direct, even acoustic guitars, gave me a lot more control over the overall sound in terms of shaping. And so, and then, you know, the mixes and stuff on the record were, you know, this is just me being an old man who, you know, I know what I like, you know, with the music that I came up on. So I think that, you know, I've got the 65-year-old ears that tell me where, you know, I think things need to land. And so my stuff maybe would not be very modern sounding, say, for Paul Carreri's production stuff with the electronic things or whatever. So he kind of balanced the old stuff that I did. And I think that's maybe one of the things that made this record sound a little more interesting.
Well, I think you did a great job on it, Sid. I've been recommending it to people and playing it on my different shows and getting some really good response from it.
I'm really grateful that you've done that. You know, I should have sent it to you. I should have sent it to you earlier, probably. I didn't think about it. I think one day I came across an email from Jeff or something where Jeff Clark, you know, said, "Yeah, I'm going to be talking to, like, you know, John Darlington." And I think he told me about that. It must have been 3 or 4 years ago. It was a while back. And at the time, I'd just gotten divorced. And was maybe not paying as close attention as I should have at various times.
Oh, yeah. And, everything works for a reason. Yeah, it all works out. It's amazing how things.
You know, I think that you got it. There have been friends of mine who've known me for decades who, when they heard it, I, you know, lost my mind using all the electronic stuff. The other song, you know, Away From Us, was about my ex-wife leaving me and my son. And that was written on a guitar, but I told Paul that I wanted it to be, you know, with no guitars. And so he took my basic track and built the song the way he thought it should be, and then I put the voices on it. So, you know, that is that's actually a pretty dark song.
Well, I'm gonna close out the show with it. That's pretty funny because I had it all set up here to play it as the last song, and then you set it up. But is there anything you'd like to say outside of the album? Anything else going on that I haven't mentioned, or anything, Sid, that you would like the listeners to know about? Maybe something going on, or any new plans or projects or anything.
I just started on a new one yesterday. I'm starting on a new project. So it'll be next year. It'll be next year sometime. You know, all I would tell your listening audience is that there are a ton of people out there making music, and it's not the same thing. And shows like yours and the bloggers, the people that that will interview people like me and show interest in what I'm doing is what's driving a lot of the, at least exposure to music other than what, like the big.
And I think people are really hungry for that, Sid. I think people want to hear good music that makes them think and stimulates them intellectually. And it's not just candy, and it's just not stuff that makes you think, oh, wow, I want to buy a record and make this guy rich. I love music that makes you think that it has something to it, has substance to it. And I think that's what's going on, because there's a lot of these stations that are they're kind of like underground because they're not on the mainstream, and they're playing a lot of stuff that is really amazing music. So I want to tell you, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate you being on.
Well, you know, I will make sure to tell everybody about your show but yeah, it really is. I make music because I'm compelled to do it. And I think I'm not the only one. There's a ton of musicians out there that will do things that are creative without any care about whether anybody actually listens to it. But to me, it's just a gas to be able to do it. You know, and at my age, what else is there but running up to the edge of a cliff and not jumping but looking over it? Going, you know, look at that. Why was I able to do something with that fun? And I didn't get arrested. You know, the police didn't come. And, you know, maybe they'll come later. But thank you for your kindness and for caring about my music and for supporting, independent music. Because even if you don't know it, we all love it.
Well, Sid, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. We're going out with Away From Us, which is from his latest record, which is Seer. And you can go on okthenrecords.us. And Sid, have a great evening. We'll talk later. We'll keep in contact. We'll definitely want to get the new music on the air. So thanks so much, and we'll talk to you later, Sid.
You're the man, Tom. Take care.
Thank you.
showing love.